from the HananiahAutos.com studio. This is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday with J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars great Tony Boselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Ticket Exchange, Geico, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
Here we go. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, and Pete Prisco, CBS Sports senior writer down in Fort Lauderdale. Jaguars Monday underway, recapping the 1914 loss in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. Good offensive performance, good defensive performance, but couldn't hold on to the football. And the points off turnovers, well, that's the game right there, ball game, as Gus said today.
You know what that game reminded me of a little bit, Pete?
What was that?
96 in St. Louis.
No, when you guys had way more productive offense than that.
No, we had over 500 yards of offense.
Right.
They had 450, so it's not like it was night and day difference. We held the Rams to nothing. They held the Chiefs to nothing. We had the ball at the end of the game, didn't do anything with it. We had five turnovers. They had four turnovers. They had the ball at the end of the game, didn't do anything with it. I mean, because the utter dominance of that Jaguar team offensively, going up and down, moving the field, 25 first downs, 200 yards rushing, 250 passing. And to score 14 points, that's hard to do. That is hard to only score 14 with that much offensive production.
Well, the Hearns drop was brutal.
Yep.
By the way, I probably would have kicked the field goal there.
I would have too.
The fumble, awful. That was just a terrible play. So that's what? That's 10 points, bare minimum, maybe 14, right?
Yep, 14 probably. You score and you're first and goal from the one.
Yeah. So, did Marquise Lee step out?
Right on the edge.
Right on the line.
They didn't even hesitate to look for it or whatever,
Yeah, I was expecting at least a closer look on TV. I don't remember seeing that.
TV did not do it. Your CBS producers did not help us out much.
No, there was not a good look of that. Absolutely.
From the angle they showed us, I thought he was would be out.
Now there's a positive that you can take out of that game, by the way. And the last couple weeks, last month, Marquise Lee looks like a football player.
What are his numbers for the year, JP? Do you have that in front of you?
He's
been the most productive receiver the last month of the season.
We were talking about this in the postgame show yesterday. It's kind of freaky how close the big three receivers are right now in statistics to each other. We'll get to you.
Hey, Hollywood, as we're looking up, can you run that back and show that picture again? On the website is Marquise Lee's long touchdown. Not touchdown, but where he – question, does he step out of bounds or not? And I'm wondering, Hollywood.
I looked at it again today, Tony. It looked like his right foot gets on the line, or his left foot gets on
the
line.
Yeah, right, I just saw it again. His left foot barely does touch it.
So Lee yesterday, 4 catches, 84 yards. For the season now, Marquise Lee, 34 catches, 442 yards. And Allen Robinson, 39 catches, 442 yards. Hearns, 31 catches, 443 yards.
They're all the same. Yard.
It's clear now, though, to me that Lee is the two. Lee's the two receiver. It's Robinson and Lee, and then Hearns. That's what it looks like to me. And you watch the tape, Tony, and I'm sure the tape shows the same thing. I didn't watch the tape yet, but it did. The tapes I've watched the recent weeks, it looks like Lee is the two and Hearns is the three.
Marquise Lee is the most explosive offensive player on the field right now. All of anyone. I'm not saying he's the number one receiver. He's the most explosive player on the field right now. Watching him on tape.
I would agree.
And the funny thing is, Pete, you know what the fan base wanted to do this offseason?
Get rid of him.
Cut him.
Yeah.
And he figured out some things in the offseason about staying healthy. He went back to his track coach, of all people, in the offseason.
Well, Marquise Lee, when he was at USC, would play football in the fall and run track in the spring.
Yeah.
Never had one hamstring issue.
Didn't even know what it was.
And so possibly one thought is that he's a guy who needs more volume of running, and when he stays engaged in running and moving, his hamstrings stay tight. But when he was shut it down for a part of the year with no track, that's when the issue started up, tighten up the muscles and everything else. So that's the guy that has been the nicest – I don't want to even say surprise, but addition to this team from a production standpoint. And that's the guy that Dave Caldwell drafted in the second round. And he's still not what I remember watching him at SC his sophomore year.
He was a stud. Yeah.
But he's getting closer and closer. And if he becomes that, Pete, he might be a number one.
I like what I've seen from him. I really do. I mean, that's of all the things in the last couple of weeks, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, that's the most that has to be the most encouraging for the future moving forward. Because, look, Robinson is what he is. He just, you know, he's a big receiver. Doesn't run great, so he doesn't get a lot of separation in terms of running away from people, even though he did yesterday. But Marquise Lee, like you said, Tony, he's got the gear and the stuff that the explosiveness that the other guys don't have, and that's got to be encouraging moving forward.
What were your thoughts watching the game, Pete, from where you were? And I'm asking more from an offensive standpoint with the change made at offensive coordinator.
I liked it. I did. And you know me, I'm a pass guy, but I thought the way they ran the ball, it looked different to me. And, you know, and I haven't watched the 22 yet, but just from on the TV, it looked different. It looked like it was – did they change some of their scheme a little bit in the run game, Tony? Did they do some things differently? It looked different.
Everything they had pretty much done, there was aspects of what they'd done in the past. I mean, they ran more outside zone than they had the last couple of weeks. They had the zone read. They ran some power.
I hate the zone. I hate the zone read
okay,
with the quarterback.
That's fine. But I'm just telling you what they did. they did some cutback stuff. They pulled the guards a little bit more than they have on the front side. They ran stretch, almost an outside zone or outside play. And instead of just running zone concepts, they got a pin and a pull with the front side guard and sometimes the center as well. So they did some nice things. But I think what Hackett did a good job of was coordinating everything together, run and pass, some good play action stuff off of it, some different formations. I thought they did a good job of formationing Kansas City into some advantages for them. We saw some more bunch personnel. We hadn't seen a lot of that. Coming into this game. So I really was impressed with what Hackett did and how he dictated the pace of the football game. And they dictated what they wanted to do to that Chiefs team.
Yeah.
And that's that's the 10th overall defense in the NFL. It's not like they're a bunch of – and they had all their guys.
Like,
I mean, they were healthy.
Chris Jones is a hell of a young rookie. You know, those other guys, the Howards and those guys, are good players in the down spot. Dee Ford's become a really good pass rusher. Johnson and the secondary and Berry and everything. Yeah, I mean it was a good job. And if Bortles hits one of the two deep balls, just one of the two, then you're thinking of that differently as well.
Well, you really got to hit both those. Those are guys when they're
But if he hits one of two, you're okay with it.
When they're that open, Pete, you need to hit them. If you do anything, you underthrow those because they're so open.
You know, on his run, the scramble, the big scramble.
Yeah, the last drive.
Yeah, if you go back and watch that play, he'll get a big positive for that play, but he's got Mercedes Lewis wide open in the middle of the field. All he has to do is step up and throw the ball. And it's a great play because it's like one of those Russell Wilson plays, Tony, where he runs out of a pocket and then turns it into a 25-yard gain. So you can't ding him for it or ping him for it, but you look back on it, and you go back, and I think you might have watched the 22, but at least on the TV, it looked like Mercedes Lewis wide open in the middle of the field.
I don't remember – I remember that play and watching it again. I don't remember thinking anyone was wide open. That doesn't mean they weren't. Because sometimes when I watch it so quickly after a game, I already know what's coming, so I kind of gauge my eyes towards that on a big play to see how it developed. So maybe. But I thought it was a heck of a job using his feet, getting up there. Very frustrating, though. You know, you get to second and one because the next play is a slant to Julius Thomas. You get to second and one. And you end up not getting another yard over the next three downs, and you lose the ball game. So, really, you know, and there's some things that, you know, obviously the turnovers, we'll talk about that here in a second. But there are some decisions that, you know, you can look back to. You go for three early on the fourth down. Now,
yes,
no one, I would have, Pete. Now, no one's saying that if the ball is complete. I mean, it wouldn't even be a topic of conversation today if they complete and they go down and score seven.
Well, but, I mean, for me, it would have been.
I think it's early. It's early. You take the points.
You got to take your three. You got to take your three. It's just like the Eagles yesterday. They did the same thing. Didn't take three in two spots. And you got to take – particularly if you're on the road, you got to take the three. You know, there's no saying you would have made the field goal, but you got to try and take the three.
Sure. The other thing was a couple of – I think there was at least one or a third and short that weren't able to convert. You got to clean that up. On the after the Kelce debacle when he went crazy, we can talk about that. That was embarrassing for him. It was third and 42, I want to say. Or no, third and
34.
Third and 34.
Third and 34.
Outside of field goal range. I would have played more tight defense and try to keep points off the board there. Because if you do that, all you need is a touchdown and a field goal to win. So they played really soft just to keep them, but they allowed them back in the field goal range. I thought at the time, I was like, you know, I think you got to be more aggressive there. The chances of them converting third and 34 are really, really low, even if you're aggressive. They wanted to ensure it didn't happen, but I think I would have done that. Other than that,
Cody,
I thought it was a really clean, well-called game.
I didn't like the zone read when they were driving at one point and you ran to the sideline. I didn't like that call at all. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Bad call. Bad call. What about the
– Why was it a bad call, Pete? Because it didn't work or you don't like the concept?
Well, because you got backs that have been pounding it in there and you get an opportunity for the quarterback to pull it out and run it to the sideline. It was a dumb call. I didn't like it.
If the defense would have been the look, he could have given it to him. It wasn't like it was called quarterback run. It was zone read.
I know. I mean, I just don't like –
You've been
pounding them on the run game, so pound them. If you're going to go for it that way. Then the other thing was
– JB,
we want to line up in the I formation every time.
JB, is he just a curmudgeon? Is he just negative to be negative?
Yes.
No.
Just come out and say it, Pete.
I hate zone runs with the quarterback.
Pete, just come out and say it. You hate the Jaguars.
No. You do. Oh, wait. No, you don't. You're a fan.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, what about the last play? It looked like nobody was open on the TV tape. Is
there
that true?
Was not anyone open.
Everybody was held. Yeah.
There was
held.
Some holding going on.
Yeah.
Brian Walters' arm was being pinned to his side by, I think it was Stevie Nelson.
The nickel corner.
Stevie Nelson.
Yeah. Who played good, by the way.
Yeah, he played good, but I mean, and there, you can't expect to get those calls in fourth and one. You got to win. But it was, by the letter of the law, they should have thrown a flag there. He was holding on to him as he's trying to run across.
Are you okay with that call in fourth and one?
From what standpoint?
Would you rather run the ball in that situation?
No, but remember they got backed up. It was fourth and it ended up being fourth and 2.5 because they lost yardage on third and one.
Yep.
Yeah, Poe on that play, Tony. And I didn't see I saw the TV, but it looks like they tried like the guard came off or who was it came off his double too soon, and allowed Poe to come across the face and the guy didn't get down on
it. I think Omame could have stayed a little bit longer, but it was bad footwork by Beecham. He stepped underneath himself, never gave himself a chance.
Had rough go of it yesterday.
If he had good footwork, he ties him up enough, I think, where he could get backside and maybe get the first down. Maybe. Because AJ missed his block on the front side.
Hey, guys, let's take our first time out. We'll come back and break down these turnovers for the Jags yesterday. A little more into the run game. Chris Ivory with a big
break
day.
Break it down. Let's break it down.
We're going to break it down tonight, even though the Jags
lost. I can't wait
for
PFF, too. They'll probably get them all minus. Great job, guys. Great job.
That's coming up a little bit later. Join head coach Gus Bradley at the 7th annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk, plus a one-mile fun run. That's November 19th at Everbank Field. Participants finish inside the stadium and appear on the world's largest video boards. The run benefits the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help young people recognize their full potential. Visit McKenziesRun.org to register. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Give credit to Nathaniel and the offensive staff putting together a plan. I thought they had some runs that they felt like would be good. I think there were some new runs or style of runs, maybe not the blocking, but just the deception in the backfield. I think there was a strong conviction up front. The offensive line did a good job. And yet there's still a lot that is out there, a lot more opportunities.
Head coach Gus Bradley earlier today, his day after press conference here at Everbank Field. Jaguars Monday continues. JP Shadrick, Tony Baselli here in Jacksonville at the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Yes.
Pete Prisco is down in Fort Lauderdale at the CBS Sports Studios.
Which I like him down there. Much better.
Do you? I disagree with that. I like Pete in person here.
Well, he's national. He's international.
Oh, that's right. He's an international celebrity.
World Wide Web. TV shows, radio shows,
so are you,
podcasts.
So are you, Baselli.
Yeah, we are too.
Baselli.
We are right now, actually. We're on Jaguars.com.
We're worldwide, but he's worldwide.
International Man of Mystery.
Yes.
So, the run game, we've talked a little bit about it. Ivory, 200 for the day, 205 yards rushing. The last time the Jags had over 200 yards in a game on the ground, Tony, can you name it?
Indianapolis Colts.
No. December 12th, 2010 against Oakland.
Wow.
How about that? 234 yards that day for the Jags. It's been a while.
It was Maurice Jones-Drew heyday.
Yes, it was.
I thought, listen, they did very good all over the across the board. They ran more decisive.
Yeah, is it something with Ivory? That looks like the most decisive he's been.
He was decisive, but there was also some holes for him to be decisive with. Like I said, I thought Hackett and Marone and the rest of that staff did a great job of designing the run, scheming the run, taking advantage, attacking, you know, attacking the weak side, and then as they made adjustments, going back to the other side, setting up some pass looks. I thought it was just very good overall.
Okay, so is it as simple as saying that it was Olsen's fault then?
I'm not ready to – let's not point the blame right now, and let's not anoint anyone as geniuses after one game.
No, but it looked different. It looked better. It looked crisper.
It looked more coordinated.
Yes. Well, I mean, so
– so
isn't that the job of the
ultimately
coordinator?
That is on the coordinator, but I also – it's never just the coordinator. He has a staff that's supposed to work together. So I put – you know, if the coordinator fails, you as a position coach fail, in my opinion. You all have a little bit of blame to take. So, and with the success of the coordinator, that means the assistants, the position coaches succeed. So you're always working together, Pete. It's always a group effort. But obviously, the leadership and what Hackett wanted to do and the way he implemented it was more effective than they've been any time this year.
It looks – this is with Ivory. He looks to be a guy that if there's penetration – you could forget about it. But once he gets going, you know, in other words, like when – and I'll use Fred Taylor because you played with him, you blocked for him, you know him. But when Fred would get penetration, Fred could put his foot in the ground and pop it and go to the other side.
Fred had a jump cut. Chris Ivory does not.
Correct. So it looked like they didn't get as much penetration, and once Chris Ivory got rolling, then that's where he gets at his best when he's got that power that can come out, and it's hard to take him down with one-arm tackles and stuff like that.
If you let Chris Ivory get into the line of scrimmage with some momentum, he's a very good back. But I agree with Pete. I don't think he's a great change of direction. He's not a make-you-miss back.
He's not a guy that if you're a member of the secondary one-on-one, I don't think you want to see that guy
go
coming
ask
at
Ron,
you.
Go ask Ron Parker as he about got decapitated down the sideline.
42-yard run yesterday.
It was so it was a good day. I mean, they ran. I mean, up front they blocked well. It was clean. Out of all the run plays, I thought I saw possibly one assignment error on a guy going to the next level. But overall, at least that I could recognize, no mental errors, which I can't say that previous to this game. So it's the players were more focused. You know, sometimes when you make a change like that. At the top, it gets, you know, all of a sudden, and with the message, the head coach came in and said, listen, let's go. And you get a little focused. Now, does that carry over? That's when it becomes an individual's job to say, what we did last week, I need to repeat. And it starts with the individual, then it goes to the position group, then it goes to the entire offense. But it's not just going to happen because you did it once. Good players, good teams do it week in and week out. They're consistent. I think I said this on the show, you know, Mike Mazur, offensive line coach, said. He said, listen, either be good all the time or bad all the time. But this blankety-blank up and down, I don't know what I'm dealing with. I can't handle that. And he didn't say blankety-blank,
right,
just for the record.
Okay.
No, and you could hear him clear across the practice field saying it all, too.
He had potty language sometimes.
Yeah.
You kidding me? That was like every other word out of his mouth.
Well, I'm trying to be respectful, Pete.
We'll come back, guys, and go through these turnovers and talk Jags defense. What a day they had yesterday in backed-up situations.
It was very sound, JP. Very sound.
A sound, solid day for the Jags defense. The Southern Chevy dealers are giving you a chance to win a VIP game day experience and a brand-new Chevy Malibu. Register at your local Southern Chevy dealership today for your chance to win. Visit ChevyWinners.com for more information. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Stay strong, stay determined, and realize that we have to find a way to continue on, fix these mistakes, protect the ball more, force turnovers on defense, so that we can start winning. Because you and I don't like talking about this. The fans don't want to see this. And as a team, we've had enough of this. You know, we've had enough of this. So we need to be able to find a way to make these games go our way.
That's Paul Posluszny, defensive captain, in the locker room at Arrowhead Stadium yesterday after the Jags fell to the Chiefs 19-14. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco. Jaguars Monday continues. What did you say? Sound, Pete? Sound?
Yeah, it was a good, sound defensive effort. It wasn't flashy. It wasn't turnovers. It wasn't takeaways. It wasn't tons of sacks. It was just a good, sound, fundamental defensive game. That's what it looked like to me.
Well, it's been 3 years since they got a turnover.
That's a little
They should
much.
Have had one in the middle of the field, right? They collided with each other.
The Bad News Bears showed up in the middle of the field. What were the outfielders' names in the Bad News Bears? You had the one center fielder who was really good. What was his name?
Yeah, I forget.
Carey. What was his name? Carey? But you had a couple guys that were just – they'd run into each other. Right here. We're looking at it now on the website.
Yeah, on Jaguars.com video.
I mean, yep.
Got to have that.
I mean, come on.
It almost looked like, though, he was dropping it before he even got hit, though.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, Hollywood, stop playing these turnovers. We do not want to see these. Turn them off.
We'll get to those coming up.
I don't do it very often. I usually just listen. But I went to the post-game head coach's press conference.
Oh, really? Nice. Why don't you ever do it?
I don't know. It was just right there this time.
Convenient for you.
It was right next to the locker room.
You went to listen to Andy Reid, huh?
No, I listened to the head coach, ours.
Oh, I thought you said you went to the visitors' locker
room. No. Yeah, we were visitors.
Okay.
Dummy.
I mean the home team locker room,
no.
Man. I'm sorry.
And so I just went to listen to Gus. And I've heard him, but I watched – it was as frustrated.
Oh, yeah. Short answers.
Short.
One word, two words.
Yeah. Leaning toward Belichick-esque of
– we're on to Houston.
Like,
whatever.
He was done. Mm-hmm. Like
– really?
Oh. Not happy. They'd ask questions. He's like, listen, it's about
– turnovers. We lost.
Turned them over, we lost. Are you? I mean, he would ask. It was great because the questions go. He goes, "Yep, yep." That was it. So it was frustration, not good enough. Got to win. I mean, he didn't say got to win, but he was. I think that hurt this team and staff as much as any game has hurt this year.
They did everything right,
except for hold on.
Except
to the ball.
For hold on to the football. Everything else was right.
And you know what else you could see? You could see the emotion from Gus when the call.
Oh, he was hot.
He was.
I think.
But I mean.
I think this. And I told this to somebody. And nobody wants to hear this. So
you're,
I'll say.
You're going to say it anyway.
I'll say it because I usually say what is true that no one wants to hear. Everyone is tired of losing, including Gus and the players and the fans and me and everybody.
Me too. Yep.
And so nobody wants to hear about moral victories or all over Twitter and, oh, you know, this stuff. And, you know, they beat the lowly, you know, a beat-up Chiefs team. Well, they didn't move the ball against a beat-up Chiefs defense. That was all their starters. If you can get by and step back, and I hope this team does it, and can look at that tape and not – shake your head and say, oh, no big deal, we lost. But say, we lost that game, but now let's build on what we did. Because my fear is if you lose, you just go, oh, here we go again, and get down and get, you know, discouraged. That sucks the emotion and the life and the spirit out of a team. But if they can – because I watched that game and I was so mad. I was on the plane. John Osher's next to me, showing him stuff, screaming at the iPad. But then afterwards, I stepped back after watching it and studying it and digesting it and talking to people, and I said, okay, I'm tired of losing, and I don't have that much invested compared to, obviously, the players and the coaches. We don't. I mean, we have something invested. We love this franchise, but we're not invested like them. But I said, if they can look at this and the staff can look at this and say, we're close, and the message can be, guys, that's not good enough because of the turnovers and not taking advantage of plays when they're there. But don't just throw it in the garbage. Let's take that effort. Let's take that emotion. Let's take that execution as far as assignment, good football. Coaches, let's take that plan and build on it, because if we continue to do that and clean it up around the edges, they have 8 games left. I'm not going to say that's a secret. Gus Bradley has 8 games left to prove that he deserves to come back as head coach.
Well,
8 games.
He'd have to win every. He'd have to win every one of them.
No, he does not. I don't think. This is. I'm not the owner, but.
What's the record right now?
It's 2-6.
2-6.
So if he got the. If he got to 9,
you get to 8. If you go to 8-8 in this offense,
no.
Can I finish before you just start? No, Pete.
No, I just said no.
If you go 6-2 in this offense, and I'm not listen. The fans listening going, that's stupid. We're not going to go 6-2. I'm not. I have no argument right now to say that anything we've seen up to this that they're going to go 6-2.
You guys were 3-6, right?
I don't want to go down that road because right? Everyone gets tired of talking about 96. I don't want to talk about it.
I'm just saying.
You just keep on saying. I think you got to go 6-2, Pete, and this is why. Because if you go 6-2 down the stretch and the offense continues to grow and improve and good defense and they're doing what they're going to do, you're not going to go blow this thing up being 8-8, finishing strong with the new offensive coordinator who has success and you're moving the ball and doing good things offensively and bring in a fourth offensive coordinator and offensive staff for a young quarterback. I just don't think you do that.
I would tend to disagree with you.
Okay, that's fine. And you can. I'm not saying – By the way, Shad Khan might disagree with me too. And Dave Caldwell might disagree with me as well.
I think he would.
Would 8-8 win the division?
It very well could.
No, well, now that's another story. As stupid as that sounds, Tony, if 8-8 wins a division and you get in the postseason, then it's a different story. But if 8-8 gets you sitting at home, then I think the change is coming.
Okay. And I'm not saying.
I mean, forget about 6-2 down the stretch. You can forget that.
I don't think that's what you think as a head coach. I don't think that's what you think as players. You don't worry about that. You got to go figure out a way to beat Houston. But the message I hope they're got, and I hope that they are in that locker room more than anything, because I think the coaching staff is here after they see and studying. I hope the players are like, guys, I hope every one of them look around at each other and saying, number one, that's not even our best, and look what we did. We're better than 6-2. This isn't acceptable, and we need to change it. We need to take what we did last week, clean it up, and play better football and go beat the Houston Texans.
You're throwing out the fact that Nick Foles played quarterback. He's dreadful.
I'm talking more offensively, Pete, than anything.
Okay. All right.
Defensively, they played good football for the better part of this year. They were not just without Nick Foles, Pete. They were without Jeremy Maclin as well. And in the fourth quarter,
and the running backs, right? The whole thing. Offensive line was
Spencer Ware, Shakondrick West. They already kind of share time.
Spencer Ware had taken over as the guy.
I know, but I'm saying the quarterback and the number one receiver, and then your tight end, who's your really biggest threat offensively, being out in the fourth quarter. I'm not making any statements that this was a great offense. And they had all their top guys. But defensively, that's the guys. Those are the guys they play with. Those are the guys they're going to try to win the division with and go to the Super Bowl with.
Except for Justin Houston.
Well, he hasn't been there all year, Pete.
I know, but when he gets back. I mean,
well, we'll see what he's like after his ACL, too.
Well, no matter who's on offense, when the average starting field position is the Kansas City 40 for the whole day and they only get 19 points out of that.
Oh, it's a great job.
It's a great day. Of the 5 scoring drives, the average starting field position was the Jacksonville 32-yard line.
Yeah, it's not good.
4 field goals out of that. That's big time.
Four field goals, one touchdown.
That defense, like I said, that defense did a nice job. Tony, you know, it's interesting you talk about 6-2, which is just crazy talk.
I'm not. You realize I'm not saying I'm predicting they're going to go 6-2.
I know. But here's it. You want to throw crazy talk on top of crazy talk? If they did win this week, they're only two games out of first place in the division.
Yep. That's right.
But I don't.
The 2-1 division record.
This team hasn't earned the right to talk that way yet.
No, heck no. Heck no.
Although you realize last year.
It was better Sunday.
You realize last year the Kansas City Chiefs were 1-5 and ended up 11-5?
They got hot.
Or was it 1-6 and 10-6? Something like that. Yeah. But I don't want to talk like that. I'm talking more of a mentality. The fans, I mean, they're tired of thinking that way and hoping. I get it. I mean, you're a fan. Keep on fighting. Hold on to the hope. I mean, we're sitting there with you. We're believing the best. My point is, Pete, I'm hoping in that locker room they look at that and that lights a little bit of a fire saying, wait a second, that this is just the tip of the iceberg of how we're capable of playing as an offense.
You know, Tony, I will say this, though, about your 6-2. Just mention
go look
it.
At the record. Go look at the schedule.
The other thing is, Minnesota and Denver, two teams that look like they were –
they're not world beaters at all.
They're not that good anymore.
And so, what the Broncos aren't very good at
– but Detroit's better, though, than what you expect
it is.
Them to be.
You know what Denver's not good at, Pete? I saw them last night on Sunday Night Football, and I did the game the week before against the Chargers. The Denver Broncos
–
well, forget offensively. I'm talking about this great defense. Tell me the last great defense who couldn't stop the run. Because they can't stop the run right now.
They got destroyed last night on the run game.
And they gave it up against San Diego as well, who's not a great run team.
Yeah, the nose tackle's not very good.
And not having Malik, another big body in there, hurts them. Because Jared Crick is not Malik Jackson.
No, certainly not.
So my point is saying that.
But the schedule's gotten much more favorable looking than what it was. But
and the Minnesota Vikings offensive line cannot block Pete Prisco.
No, they were better yesterday, but they still aren't very good. But Detroit's better than what you thought they would be.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So you
listen, Pete, when you're 2-6, everyone on your schedule is better than you.
Right. No, better than you thought they would be.
No, but everyone's better than you. Until you start winning, you have no right to talk about who you're going to beat, who you're better than. You're not better than anybody. Go earn that. And the way you earn that is you go out and beat the you-know-what out of the Houston Texans. And I got some news about Houston.
Oh.
Some big breaking news.
Oh, really?
That has happened here in the studio.
Really?
With our producer and myself.
Wow.
It will change how you view this game.
This is intriguing.
What is that all about?
That's I'm telling you, Pete. You're going to want to hear this.
Pete, this is what we call in the business a tease.
A tease.
And
a
we will hear about it on the other side. We'll also get to the injury report. PFF grades coming up and your calls in the second hour tonight. The JTA Stadium Shuttle has a new name. Is it still new? The Game Day Express.
New name, same game.
The Game Day Express. Take it to the bank this Sunday when the Jags.
I like mine better, by
host
the way.
The Houston Texans. I went with it.
Yeah, new name, same game, baby. Let's roll.
Let's roll.
Roll on the bus.
Roll on the bus
roll
to
on
Everbank
the game
Field.
Day. Come watch the Texans get it handed to them.
Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Daniel had a great game. I mean, to run for 200 yards and throw for 200 and whatever, I thought it was awesome. If you look at the stat sheet, minus the turnovers, there's no way you say Kansas City won. But unfortunately, that's part of the game, and we got to find ways to be better with the ball.
There's your quarterback, Blake Bortles, in the locker room at Arrowhead yesterday. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco. PFF grades coming up next
segment.
Yeah. And then we'll get some
you
phone calls.
You love that, don't you, Tony? You can't
hate
wait.
Hate it. Do we want to you want to hear the breaking news?
Is it time?
Yes.
We'll get to the injury report as well coming up, but go ahead.
Yeah. So I walk into the studio today, and the highly esteemed producer of the show, Joe Fortunato.
We've heard of him.
He's been here forever.
Forever. Father Time, we call him.
I think he was part of the people who laid the first brick of this great stadium. Yeah. And his frustration level, I'm going to tell you, he does the game day up in the booth, and he's probably had some choice words for some people. And it's not
mostly you.
Mostly me. Some foul language, which his wife Linda does not approve of.
Yeah.
And a little bit negative at times. And I'm trying to pick him up.
Thanks, pal.
But he's been negative. So I didn't know what to expect when I came in here today.
Okay.
And, you know, every week I kind of talk. Some weeks I lock the game. It's a guaranteed victory.
It's the Baselli lock of the week.
I didn't lock last week. I didn't lock the week before.
You locked the week before that, though.
I did.
We won.
Yeah. I know. And I walked in here today, and Joe Fortunato said, I guarantee you we are beating the Houston Texans.
Joe said this. Of all people.
It shocked me. He's the most negative person I know.
Count on it.
He said, count on it. He said, guarantee it. And I said,
Look at you, Joe.
I said, Joe, will you lock it? And he goes, lock it. So for the first time in the history of the show, because I'm ready to announce, it's going to be a double lock.
A double lock.
Guaranteed victory.
Double lock. Over the division-leading Houston Texans.
Double lock it. Not just a lock, a double lock.
Hey, Pete, you want to make that a triple lock?
No.
Come on, Peter.
But I do think they have a good they have a chance. I will say
so
that.
You're saying there's a chance.
I think they're going to be close. Well, I'm not going out on a limb and saying lock.
Lock.
Every time you say lock, every time Tony says lock, it goes in the toilet.
No, whoa. Last lock, we won. Actually, the last two locks, I locked the London game and I locked the Chicago game. There's only two games I've locked all year.
Why didn't you lock the last two then?
I wasn't feeling it. I picked us to beat the Raiders, but it wasn't a lock. There's degrees of confidence I have. When I say lock, it's done. Bank it. And the double lock has never been defeated in the history of locks.
I don't think it's ever been attempted.
That too.
So.
They're going to win.
There you have it.
We'll break that game down later. Let's do some
injuries. People were waiting just for that, and they got it.
Yeah, they got
the
it.
Double lock. Here's the
you
injury,
heard it here first.
Injury report.
If you see it in the Times Union tomorrow, you can say I heard it on the radio before they ever reported it. It will probably be news.
Because that's what happens on radio. This is timely news.
Yes. Check the website.
Couple concussions to discuss. Alan Hurns is in the concussion protocol. Well, he was rolled up from behind early in the game, came back in, and then not long after that.
I think he got the concussion when he hit his head on the turf.
That's correct.
On the in route.
Brian Walters also in the concussion protocol. He was cleared to go back in the game, and then after the game had symptoms again. He's in the protocol now, so two receivers down right now.
It's just so different. And it's the right way to do it, but it's so different. The whole protocol, there was no protocol. It was like, if you got through the game.
Yeah, can you read these fingers, right?
And if you weren't, like, throwing up, vomiting, and passing out, or, you know, excruciating headache, I mean, you just went home.
This, Tony, is the 21st century.
No, I said it's good, Pete. I'm just, every time I hear it, it's just so different to me. You know, because you hear like sometimes you hear about guys coming back and showing symptoms the next day.
Yep.
So Tony, when you were in high school, because you played high school a while ago, I played high school a long time ago. But if you got hit in the head, didn't they stick something underneath your nose and say go back in?
I remember. I think I had two concussions in high school. One, I just hit the ground with my head like three times in a row and was hitting people. And I had the worst headache I've ever – like I couldn't even like open my eyes. And I remember my coach was like, you're not going in? And I went back in trying to play and I was hitting people. And I literally would take me to my knees almost. My head hurt so bad. And I couldn't finish. I mean, I just couldn't. I mean, I was in tears and because I felt just terrible. It was a big game. And then
– You were crying?
Oh, I was so upset. And then my senior year, I think I got a concussion. I played the whole game, and I got back to the locker room, and I couldn't remember my combination for the life of me. They're like, come on. I'm like, coach, I couldn't get in my keys. I couldn't get anything. I had to come cut the lock off. I just, like, it was erased from my memory.
Wait, let's go back a second. You were crying.
Yeah, that's what I want to get to. You buried the lead.
Well, I was a junior in high school. I was crying because my head hurt so bad, and I was so upset. It was for the district championship, and I couldn't go back in.
No crying in football this season.
No, I did. I'm an emotional person. But now it's so different. I mean, coaching high school football, we've had a couple kids get concussions this year, and there is a baseline test. You have to pass the test, and then once the kid passes the test, It's a four-day process he has to go through before he can come back on the field.
I think it's fantastic that they're doing that, by the way.
I do, too.
I really do. And I think it's better that they do that kind of thing all the way through than have everybody pounding on the game of football for how bad it is.
I agree.
You know?
Yep. A couple other injuries. We'll go to break. We've got the PFF grades coming up. Miles Jack, left hip flexor sprain. Jared Odrick, leg injury. They'll update his status on Wednesday. Denard Robinson, a back strain. Played through it, and Blake Bortles had stitches on his chin. He will not be on the injury report.
You can't hurt him.
No, made of steel. We're back in a moment. PFF grades your calls, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Get tickets for Sunday's game against the Texans. It's the annual Salute to Service game here at Everbank Field. Call 633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
You know, you look at some of the stats, and you see the third down, the defense much improved. They held them to 1 out of 14. Offense, rushing the ball, 205 yards, something like that. Penalties were down to 5. But we didn't come here to collect positives. We came here to win, and we didn't get it done.
Head coach Gus Bradley in his postgame presser yesterday at Arrowhead Stadium. Second hour, Jaguars Monday. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco, Jaguars All-Access TV. Right now on Channel 4.
I don't know what you speak of.
Jonathan Cyprian is the guest tonight.
Having a good year, Jonathan Cyprian.
Yeah. Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, he is. He's one of those guys that's really improved his game.
And contract year, too.
That's right, yeah.
Amazing how that works.
Second-round pick. First pick of the second round, right? That year?
Yes.
Yeah, so just out of the first round. So PFF grades, we'll have your calls coming up, 355-NFL1. All that coming. You got the grades ready, Mr. Prisco?
I do.
Did they bash the Jags?
Yes. Well, we should change the segment to Irritate Boselli.
I like that. Okay. The Irritate Boselli segment commencing now.
Okay. How many offensive players were in the green, Tony?
Let me think here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Five.
Incorrect. 2.
Oh, okay. Which Chris Ivory is one.
He is not. Minus.
Okay, I'm done.
Already?
Thanks. Let's go to the next segment.
No. Who were the other ones you thought were positive?
TJ Yeldon.
Minus. Slight minus.
The guy had, what, 4.7 a carry and a touchdown receiving?
They must really –
the fumble.
They gave him a – how about this? They gave him a minus 1.1 in the run game, but that must be for the fumbles.
Yeah. They must really knock you big for fumbles.
He took a lick, though, now, I'll tell you that.
Marquise Lee.
He's positive, but not totally in the green, but he's a positive.
Okay.
Two big greens.
Brandon Linder.
Correct. Highest graded player on the team, on the offense.
He was one of my...
And really a high grade in the run game. Accurate?
Yes. Played very well. A.J. Can.
No.
Wait, Ivory negative. Wasn't one? Did I miss that? Ivory was not
one? No, he was not one.
No, A.J. Can, positive in the run game, negative in the pass game. Yes or no?
No.
Okay. Allen Robinson is positive.
7 for 76 and a touchdown.
Yeah, but they probably give him a big positive from winning outside big plays that should have been there. So, big negatives, Tony, on the offense.
Probably Blake because he not only the interception but the two others that could have been easily picked.
No, negative, but not a big negative. Not a big negative.
Two. Parnell.
No.
I wouldn't have given him one either. I just figured.
Oh, Parnell, negative. Big negative.
Yeah, I figured because D Ford got a couple hits and a sack. But I don't think he was.
Beat him.
I thought Parnell was positive in the run game.
They gave him a decent run game block. They gave him a horrible pass. I mean, minus 6.6 is a horrible pass blocking grade.
And I would have put Beach positive in the pass and negative in the run.
Bad run, bad, not so bad in the pass, but a negative. So, yeah, so those two are the negatives. But, yeah, you're close. You're close.
I mean, I don't know what minus six means. I mean, so.
It's horrible. It's a horrible performance.
That means it's bad.
I don't think he was horrible.
All right, let's go to the defense.
I don't think you rush. You have 450 yards of offense, rush for 205, you have 250 passing, you know, are horrible in many places.
All right, let's go to the defense. There are a lot of – there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 greens.
Puz.
Highest graded defensive player.
At 10 tackles.
Jalen. He didn't do much. They didn't even throw the ball.
No. He's positive, but he's not in the green, though. Yeah. But, yeah, he's positive.
Telvin.
No. Yeah, which I thought was surprising.
Well, he got beat on that one touchdown, yeah.
Yeah.
How about Colvin?
No.
How about Avery Jones? I thought he played very well.
Avery Jones, slight minus, but not in the red or anything.
I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Just tell me,
Tyson,
because this is dumb. This is
Tyson
so dumb.
Tyson in the
turn
green.
Turn me off, Joe. I'm done.
Tony, was Tyson good? Looked like it on TV. He played pretty solid. He's in the green.
Yeah, I thought he played well.
John Cyprian in the green.
Played well.
Prince Amukamara in the green.
Besides the bad news Bears effort, played well.
Dante Fowler in the green.
He had two big hits but and played the run well, but not much in the pass.
They gave him a positive grade in the pass rush.
He had one rush that stood out to me that he bent the corner and forced Foles to step up into pressure, but nothing dramatic to me. So I don't know.
And Ngakoue got a positive grade.
I don't know. Okay.
And Malik got a big negative. Not a big negative, but a negative.
Yeah. I don't know what they're looking at. Pete, they're grading off. They're grading off a TV copy. They have no idea. They don't know.
I know, but it's a great segment because you get so worked up over it. Hey, Tony, on Miles.
Why do we
Jack
have to do this anymore?
This is the Miles tape Jack.
Miles Jack got a minus grade on his 9 plays. On the reverse to Hill, well, that's him. He got sucked inside, right? He's supposed to be out there making that play, right?
Yeah, and the second time he didn't get sucked outside, but Tyreek Hill's so dang fast.
Right.
He got the edge.
But 9 plays for Miles Jack because, you know, he didn't play that much.
Scoot had a nice tackle for a loss.
Sure did.
He played 15 plays.
He had a really nice tackle for a loss and played the run very well.
You still play Jack over him?
I would, but they obviously
I would too, just for the future.
They obviously see something that
he's playing okay, right?
Yeah, and Scoot is playing playing good too.
Hey, Tony, Sheldon Day hasn't taken off like you thought he would, huh?
No. He needs to be in situation. I think his best football is when you have the lead and you can let him go one gap and go rush the passer. He's not a huge human being, so you start getting double teams on him. I don't know. He needs, you know, and he's getting better. He'll get better with his leverage and strength and everything else. But I think
he should be like that kid at Atlanta, Grady Jarrett from Clemson.
Well, he might be. He's a rookie, Pete.
Yeah. Well, that kid was good. Was better as a rookie. So.
Okay.
I think Sheldon Day. There might be something. He still might not be all the way back either. You know, when you have a back injury.
Yeah, that's right.
I think his best football is when you have the lead and you can let him go rush the passer. He's a quick, up-the-field guy. And they haven't had the lead very often.
Tashawn Gibson got his highest grade of the year, I think. No, second highest grade of the year.
It's great, Pete. I don't care.
He's been a little bit of a disappointment, I think.
I disagree.
Why?
You do.
Why, Pete?
I just don't think he's been great. I mean, or good. I think he's been okay.
I'd like more interceptions.
I know,
you know he's a ball hawk guy.
He hasn't been as good as Weddle. That's a given.
I think Weddle. They asked Weddle to do more. Get more engaged at the near the line of scrimmage and blitzing. I mean, he is a true center field guy. He matches up on the slot receiver sometimes when they get in blitz, and I think he does a pretty good job, Pete.
But Gibson being there has made Cyprian a better player. I'll say that.
Yeah, because now Cyprian can go do what he's good at, which is play box safety and stop the run and cover tight ends and underneath the routes. And He plays a little bit of high, single high safety at times when they rotate and do different looks and some two high safety, but mostly he's a box safety, and he's doing a really dang good job at it.
Tony, Dante Fowler does play hard against the run, though.
He's a physical freak. He just has no clue how to rush the passer yet. And that doesn't worry me, Pete. I mean, he's never played defensive end in his entire life, and he sat out football all of last year. That's why I said that if he got 5 sacks this year, I thought it would be a huge year for him. A good year. For a guy who's never rushed a passer? You talk about Dee Ford. Very good pass rusher right now. I think this is his third or fourth year. Played at Auburn. Was a pass rush specialist at Auburn up until this year.
Struggled.
He came on late last year. But before that, was non-existent. Pass rushers take some time, especially guys that don't do it a lot. He is a freak, though. And if he figures it out, he will be a impact player on that defense. Just hasn't figured it out yet when it comes to the rushing the passer, but you can see his athletic ability by the way he runs around, plays the run, hits people. I mean, he's a physical freak.
Yeah, he definitely has talent. There's no doubt about that. He's got a ton of talent. It's just he's got to learn how to, like you said, he's got to learn how to use his hands.
How to set up tackles, how to dip. He has no inside move that can threaten a tackle at all right now. He just doesn't have it. A lot of young rushers don't.
You see Von Miller's inside spin last night?
Yeah, Von Miller has it.
He had 11 and a half his first year, too. I mean, he had
that's what he did at Texas. That's what he did at Texas A&M, though, Dupe.
Right.
He went from playing a 3-4 outside backer who rushed the passer at Texas A&M to a 3-4 outside backer in Denver who rushed the passer and got after it. It's a much easier transition than what Dante Fowler has had to do. And Von Miller did not have a ACL that forced him to miss an entire year of football.
Just for,
apples and oranges.
Robert Quinn had 5 sacks his first year. J.J. Watt had 5.5, just for point of reference for all those out there. Takes time.
Yep, it does. It's not going to be turned on overnight.
You guys want to get to the phone lines here?
Yeah.
Are we going to go to break first? And then
no.
Phone? Oh, right,
we're going to do a couple
before
breaks.
We love the phone lines.
Yeah, I'm asking. I didn't know.
Just relax. So that the Irritate Baselli segment actually has only just begun. So let's go to the phone lines. 355-NFL-1.
This is when it really irritates them, JP. Come on.
355-6351. We'll start in East Arlington with Brian. Brian, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? You know, after watching this game this past Sunday, I came to the realization that I've got to take the Tony Baselli glasses off, and I've just got to realize that Bortles is just not that good, and he's not going to be able to get it done moving forward. He's consistently made bad decisions on the goal line. Luckily, the Chiefs player couldn't catch that ball, and it's been a trend now all his career. When he gets down towards the end zone, he makes really bad decisions. And there's just you can't coach that out of somebody. When they get in the heat of the moment, you're not going to be able to teach them not to do those things. He just doesn't have the fundamentals.
Wait,
make
Brian,
the passes.
So, Brian, so you're in your expert opinion of analyzing quarterbacks and all the time you spent on the practice field of coaching and working with guys, you're saying it is unfixable, and you can't teach a quarterback how to be better in the red zone in their decision making. I just want to make sure that's your take.
That's my take.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
If it was, then why hasn't he improved? Why is he making such bad decisions consistently throughout his career? Now he hasn't improved at all on that. He is so inconsistent. I don't see how you're going to take a guy that's been like that his whole career and all of a sudden
his whole career
he's
played
good.
He has played 2 years of football games. His whole career, you make him sound like he's a 10-year vet.
Yeah, but
I mean, come on, Brian. First of all, he made huge.
The new quarterbacks coming in the league now are coming in and playing immediately, and they're playing good. And the ones that are bad, they're coming in, they're playing bad, they're moving on. The new quarterback thing coming in now isn't 2-3 years. These guys are coming in, they're playing good right off the bat.
Hey, Pete, what do you say about all this?
you know, sometimes there's some instincts, and the field shrinks, and that when you're there and your instincts have to start taking over at some point, and you're reading the field and everything else. And I don't know if he's good at it yet, but that doesn't mean he can't get good at it. And you know, you talk about the young quarterbacks coming in playing right. Yeah, Dak Prescott's playing great football.
He also has the best offensive lineman in football
and the best running game.
Best running game
and
in
Dez
football.
Bryant.
And Dez Bryant. Right. You know how much easier it is when you have an offensive line that.
Well, he's not really throwing it to Dez.
No, but you understand how easy it is when you have a dominant offensive line and a featured back that's going to break the rookie record.
I agree.
I mean, come on. It's apples and oranges.
Look at Carson Wentz. He threw like eight picks
yesterday.
Right. After 3 weeks where they schemed it up, made it easy for him, people have figured Carson Wentz out, and he's back to reality again. So it happens. It's going to take – but Bortles should be more advanced in the red zone than he is. I mean, that's a given.
Okay,
Tony.
Fine.
That's a given.
I'm not disagreeing with that. My contention with the caller, Brian, saying you can't coach it. Like you're some expert. Like you've been coaching your whole life, and you just can't fix that. It's an unfixable problem. It's over. Scratch it. His whole career he can't do it. He's played 2 years' worth of football. And, by the way, he made huge improvement from year one to year two. Has he this year? No. I'm not going to argue that. But to all of a sudden, let's scrap it and he can't be coached? Come on. You're better than that. That's ridiculous. That's a dumb, dumb, dumb. And one more dumb statement. That you can't coach it? Now, if we're sitting here next year or the year after and it's still over and over again, fine. But I'm not going to – I mean, I just think it's unfair to say after 2 years that you can't teach a guy how to be better at a position. And I think we make these overarching statements that these guys are just come in from day one. Marcus Mariota, by the way, has taken a step back from year one to year two. Jameis Winston hasn't taken the big step from year one to year two. Throwing a lot of picks. A lot of picks. Dak Prescott, perfect.
To be determined.
Yeah.
To be determined.
Still early.
But a great situation, Pete.
Right, but it's still to be determined.
Exactly. Carson Wentz, back to reality.
Jared Goff, not playing.
Teddy Bridgewater hurt.
Derek Carr's the one guy that's taken the step.
He has, no doubt about it. One guy. I can make it sound like in recent history, Robert Griffin was, look at year one, stepped in, got it figured out. Hasn't been played since. Some of it's injuries. The only guy lately that has come in and consistently from day one been dominant and played at a high level as of late that I can think of, and maybe there's one or two more, but it's Andrew Luck. Those guys don't come around very often, Pete.
Correct. And he was the first overall pick. But, I mean, Blake was the third overall pick, so.
That's right. We'll come back. More of your calls. Kyle, Michael, you guys are on the line. We'll get to you guys coming up.
Unbelievable. I hope they're better than that last one.
The Irritate Baselli
Angry
segment.
Guy. I knew it. We knew we would bring the angry guy out, JP.
It's going swimmingly tonight, Pete. This is just like we planned it. The Irritate Baselli segment expands into the next segment. Check out Jack Hanania's Audi Jacksonville on Blanding. You can lease a beautiful new A3 from just $229 a month. Head over today for details. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Turnovers, we were on the sideline, then nobody say, oh, my God, here we go again. It was just, all right, come on. We're going to get out there. We're going to move the ball because we were that confident in our preparation. So, you know, unfortunate things happen. You know, had those turnovers, and, you know, it sucks to be on the losing end.
It certainly does, Mercedes Lewis. In the locker room last night at Arrowhead Stadium, J.P. Shattuck, Tony Baselli, Pete Prisco, Jaguars Monday Radio rolls along. The Irritate Baselli segment rolls along as well as we go back to the phone lines, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We go back to East Arlington. Kyle is on the line tonight. Kyle, you're on the air. What's up?
Oh, I just, unlike the previous caller, mine is much more positive. I know it's hard to be that way with a loss, but, you know, I thought we played really good ball. We can learn how to hold on to the ball, particularly on the road against a very good team. And I know it's a loss and it hurts, but it's a long time since 95 Jaguars fan. I was pretty impressed with them. I think there was some growth there in it. And it's just like Tony was saying, I hope they took that positive, if there is a positive, I believe there is, the locker room. I can't say 8-8. I might go 7-9, which is respectable, I would think. You guys agree?
Yeah, it's 5-3 second half.
Yeah, no, it would be.
Doesn't save the job, though.
Well, think about it this way. How many wins did we get last year? 4. Now, if we get 7, we get 7 wins this year, that's a bad 40%, 33 1/3% increase.
I like the math.
Think about it that way. And it's on the road against a very good team. Forget the quarterback. You know, I listened to the radio very early on Sunday morning, their radio station in KC, and they were talking like, this is going to be a cakewalk. Well, it wasn't a cakewalk. It was not a cakewalk for Kansas City, which is a very good team. I'll just listen to your comments off the air, guys. Hey, rock on.
Appreciate
rock
the call,
on,
man.
Baby.
Rock,
I like it.
Rock on, baby.
See, that wasn't an irritate Tony call. That was a nice.
It was a well-informed, logical thinking, balanced call.
Because it agreed with you.
So you disagree, Pete?
Yeah, I don't, it's encouraging they played well there, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not a win. It doesn't matter.
Pete, that's what I said.
They got to win games.
That's what I said.
But you said they could. But he thinks if they went 7-9, that they would keep Gus. I don't think so.
I never said anything about that.
Well, you agreed with him.
When did I agree with him, Pete? What point did you?
You said it was a good, well thought out call.
That's what I said. It was a good, well thought out call. It doesn't mean I agree. He was sane. He made sense. Wasn't throwing out these, blurting out these, definitives like, you know, it can't be fixed. You know, his career is over. You know, I mean, it was he. He seemed like he had some sense to him. That's all I said.
Okay. I would not argue with you on that.
I agreed. I started the whole show off saying you got to win. Doesn't matter how many stats. I mean, you can't turn the ball over. You need to win. Gus said it in the press conference. He goes, "We didn't come here to collect a bunch of niceties and stats. We came here to win a football game."
We didn't get it done.
Didn't get it done.
Let's see if Michael in Orlando can follow that up tonight on the phone line. Michael, you're on the air. What's up?
Not much. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks, man.
So I want to talk about one good thing and one horrible thing, if that's all right.
Sure, why not?
All right. So one good thing, I think probably the most valuable defensive depth we have is Tyson Alualu. Every time we put that guy in, he's just solid and plays really well. That's my thought.
Tyson is a guy that caught a lot of heat early, banged up his knee early, and caught heat more than anything because of being the 10th overall pick, and people thought, you know, my goodness, blown draft pick and everything else. Set aside where he was picked, Tyson Alualu is a good pro and is a valuable member of this defensive front and has come in and started for the injury because of the injury of Jared Odrick, and I think Tyson does a very good job. Is he a flash player? No. But is he a guy who every snap is going to go out there, do his job, hold the point, make plays in the run, get occasional push pressure on the in the pass? Yes. He's a very good football player.
Is he better than
Definitely.
Audrey?
I love that about him. So, very dependable. So, but the other thing that's, like, atrocious, I tweeted both you guys the picture, the freeze frame. Chris Ivory scored that touchdown. The ball was past the goal line and then fumbled. And the refs screwed us out of that game.
I would agree with you. I thought that he did score. The play on the field was called a fumble, and I can understand why I disagree with it. They said they didn't have enough information because of they felt the players were blocking and they could not see a good look. I think if you put all the pictures together and look at when the ball crosses and the fact that it was somebody who came and knocked the ball out after it had crossed, that you could have overturned it, but they did not. They didn't think there was sufficient evidence.
I agree. I thought it was a touchdown, but you couldn't overturn it.
Yeah, and that's what Dean Blandino said in his video. Pete, you asked him, is Alualu better than Odrick?
Is Alualu better than Odrick right now?
Right now, yeah, because he's playing and Odrick's on the bench.
No, no, no. When Odrick has been on the field and Alo-Alo has been on the field, is he better than Odrick?
I think Jared Odrick has a lot of talent.
It's a yes or no.
Can I get there?
It really is a yes or no.
I understand that. Can I set it up, though? I think Jared Odrick has a lot of talent and can make more splash plays, whatever that means, but more big plays.
Impactful.
Yeah, yes. Impactful maybe is the right word, but Tyson makes those too. But I think Tyson is more consistent, and you get the same thing all the time, every play, effort, energy, execution. And so as a coach, I would trust right now Tyson more because I know I'm going to get every snap.
Is it a yes or a no?
I just answered. So, if
so
I,
he's yes. He's better than
Odrick. The answer is yes.
As a coach, if I had to make the decision, I don't see him practice or anything else, but watching the tape, and now this is just over. I'm not talking about last year. I'm not even talking about the beginning of the year. I'm talking over the last four games where they've both played. And the last two were just been Tyson, or you know, so a total of four. I think Tyson has been more consistent, where therefore you can, as a coach, I know what I'm getting out of there, so I would play him above Jared Odrick right now.
All right, JP, I'll put it in more abrupt terms. He's better right now.
Okay.
Since Tony tap danced around the whole
question. No, better right now or better, period?
He's better. He doesn't have more talent. He does not have more talent.
Pete, isn't that what I just said? I was explaining to the people listening why I felt that way. That's all I was doing.
But you didn't just come right out and say he's better.
I just said I would play Tyson Alualu over Jared Odrick. What else do you want me to say?
Say he's better.
Oh, okay, let me say it this way. I'd play a worse player and sit the better one down. No, I just said who I would choose to play, meaning I think Tyson's playing better right now.
But you also had to put in there, well, Jared's not playing right now.
No, I said over the game, last four games, evaluating the two of them, two which Jared Odrick played and two which he did not, but Tyson played, I would play Tyson. That's what I said. I mean,
Hey, a couple more.
JP, you're the judge on this thing. Give me a verdict.
He is waffling a lot right now, Pete.
Yeah,
a lot of waffling going on.
There's my judge.
Not a definitive answer. He's waffling.
He got to the definitive answer.
But
I'll
he took a
that.
Long scenic route to get there, Pete.
Yes, he did.
Let's get another call in. Devin is on the south side. Devin, you're on the air. What's up?
I hate both of you, by the way.
Yeah,
it looks like you've eaten too many waffles, JP.
It's starting to aggravate me. Every time Dante Fowler is either in a tackle or something's going on, he's pulling the Andre branch and he's running his mouth. And he ain't done nothing. Great. And I know he's not, you know, I'm frustrated with him. He aggravates me. He's just watching the man play. He makes a play down the field, gets into a tackle with someone, and then wants to get up in someone's face. What are you celebrating on? You just got whipped down the field, and you cover back, and you got his thing, and you are getting someone's face. What's the point of that?
Good question. Thanks for the call.
I think it's a maturity issue, and I agree that the hitting people, making a tackle, and getting up in their face and starting jawing at them has to stop. It's already cost them multiple 15-yard penalties. It's hurt the team. And he had to be pulled away one time yesterday, and it's too much.
Yeah, knock it off.
Just
knock it off.
Just stop. Just hit the guy. You want to celebrate with your teammates? I'm all about that. I like the emotion. Celebrate with your teammates. You don't need to get up and get in the guy's face after every tackle that is made. Just get up, walk away, celebrate, high-five your teams. You want to flex to the crowd. I don't care about any of that. But don't do something that's going to hurt your team, and you already have. And you're on the edge of doing it more.
I flex to the crowd all the time, by the way.
You can't
flex. Hey, by the way, P.S., Andre Branch's name was mentioned. He's actually playing really good football.
Is he really?
Dolphins. Yes, he is.
No, he's not. Is he really?
Yes, he is.
How many?
I swear.
Does he have sacks?
Yeah, I don't think he has many sacks, but he's playing. I'm telling you, he's playing good football for him. He's actually pressuring the quarterback from his right defensive end spot,
wow.
If you can believe it.
I'll have to do a little research. I'm going to do some research and ask around the league about that, Pete. Yeah.
I talk to people in the organization. I'm telling you, they say he's playing good.
Well, of course they're going to say he's playing great.
No, they would. No, they believe me. They wouldn't say it. They would tell me.
Well, good for him if he is.
He's got three sacks, Tony.
Three. I don't. Did he have that many in 4 years here?
Wow.
His highest. Yeah, he had 6 1 year. Remember when he was the king of looping around on a TN stunt and getting a sack.
That's right. Falling into a couple.
A lot of windmill dances he's doing down there then.
Let's finish off the Irritate Buscelli segment with Terrell at the beaches. Terrell, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Just had more of an observation, not a question specifically. I've noticed, I really want Blake, Bortles to do well. I still have hope. But I've noticed that a lot of the quarterbacks in the league, prior and current, a lot of the successful quarterbacks come from the Power Five conferences, Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, Pac-12,
really?
And ACC. And I just want to get your take on, why do we draft quarterbacks that don't play in those leagues?
What about Ben Roethlisberger? Where did he play?
Oh, no, actually, I was actually going to say, with the exception of Ben Roethlisberger and Joe Flacco, Miami, Ohio, and
Delaware,
respectively.
One of the highest-rated quarterbacks in the league right now is Derek Carr. Where did he play?
Fresno.
That I'm actually not sure.
Fresno State.
He's played at Fresno.
Yeah, you're off base with that. Because for years, there were a lot of the SEC produced no starting quarterbacks for years, remember? It was hard to find anybody that could play quarterback other than Peyton Manning in that league. So forget about that. That's a great myth. You find them where you find them. Doesn't matter where they play.
Agree.
There you have it. We'll come back. Thanks for the calls tonight. The Irritate Buscelli segment is officially concluded. We'll go around the National Football League when we come back. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HenneyAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
PRI Productions is the Southeast premier full-service event company with everything you need to bring your next event to life. Visit PRIProductions.com to learn more. JP Shadrick, Tony Buscelli in Jacksonville, Pete Prisco down in Fort Lauderdale. Jaguars Monday rolls along with a look around the National Football League, and we begin in the AFC South with the divisional teams, and we'll get to the power rankings in the AFC South as well before we look around. We start with the Texans. They were off. They're coming into Jacksonville this week. The Colts had an 18-point lead in the fourth quarter. Luck battled through a couple of picks in the game. The Packers had a couple of late touchdowns, 31-26. Some big throws late to seal the win for Luck, the Colts over the Packers at Lambeau. The Chargers beat the Titans 45-35. Melvin Gordon had a day. Flowers had the pick late to seal it, and the Chargers all of a sudden are getting hot.
Chargers are a good football team. Yeah. I've been saying that for a long time.
That's a great division.
It should be like 6-3, Tony. They're 4-5. They should be 6-3.
They blew three late games. Two for sure that they should have won. Yep. One would have been
Kansas City, Indy. Two
Kansas
of them,
City,
yeah.
Indy should, and Oakland would have gone to overtime if they don't drop the field goal.
How good is that division right now, by the way? AFC West.
Very good.
Oh. It's the best.
So, what do you make of the Titans right now after this loss?
Marcus Mariota threw two pick sixes. He's not,
he fumbled. He lost one, and one was a fumble.
Oh, one, okay. Turnovers that led to direct scores.
They couldn't run it, which was surprising. They couldn't run the football. You thought with San Diego had some injuries on their defense too, and they just could not run the football. And that's their identity. If they can't run it, they got problems.
Exotic smash.
They still scored a lot of points, Pete.
Yeah. Well, they got a lot of that came late. There was some of it late, but yeah, you're right. They moved the football, but they didn't run it though.
The Indianapolis Colts, are they ready to make a run here?
No. They will be an
up and better.
They'll be an up and down team because their roster overall is very average.
They look better though.
Well, they got Andrew Luck and they got some good receivers, but I don't trust their offensive line. And tell me where the playmaker on defense is.
They don't have one.
Yeah,
I don't see them being able to consistently win. I think they'll be a 7-9 team, 8-8.
of course, the Texans.
So you don't think they're going to win the division then?
I think 8-8 wins the division. So if they get to 8-8, they might.
Right. I mean, he gives them the edge over everybody else. Andrew Luck gives them the edge over everybody else in the division. It's not a good football team, but he gives them the edge.
Hard to argue that, Pete.
The Texans will come in here this week 5-3, the division leader. So
they're going to leave 5-4 because of the double lock.
Yeah, it's a double lock situation. So
double lock, that's
right. Double lock.
Joe and Tony.
Or some people like to call it the combination lock.
Right. So that said, how about the AFC South power rankings after week 9?
I'll go first this time.
Go ahead. We'll probably agree this week.
I'm going to go with the Colts 1.
Ooh.
Well, we're not going to agree.
Ooh.
I'm going to go with the Texans 2. I'm going to go with the Titans 3. And as much as it pains me to say, it is what it is, the Jaguars are 4 right now.
No pom-pom waving for you. I like
wow.
it. Sheer honesty. I'll go.
I'm always honest, Pete.
You're crazy on Indy at the top, by the way.
Well, wait a second. Why am I crazy? Pete just said they have the quarterback that gives them an edge over everybody.
Well, they're probably going to win. I think they're going to find a way to win the division, but it doesn't mean they should be in the number one spot right now.
Yeah, power rankings. Week to week.
Week to week. Power rankings. They're better than the Texans.
Week to week league.
All right. I like
Pete, let me ask you a question. They play this Sunday. Texans-Colts.
Texans just beat them a couple weeks ago.
Can I finish? Texans-Colts, neutral field. Yeah, they beat them with some fluky stuff at the end of the game. Texans-Colts, neutral field. Who are you picking?
Colts.
Okay, they should be number one in your power rankings.
No. Houston beat them, and they have a better record. They have to be ahead of them.
Okay.
So Houston number one, Colts number two, Titans number three, Jacksonville number four.
All right, a little difference in opinion this week.
Not much, though.
Two. Yeah, not much.
Tony's just being contrarian.
Yeah,
that's all.
That's fair. let's look around the rest of the NFL. The first 12 drives for the Steelers, they had 9 three-and-outs and 52 yards. They scored touchdowns on two of their last three drives to make it respectable, but that was not the best return for Ben Roethlisberger.
Two teams that I thought were going to be good this year are really struggling. The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Green Bay Packers, both at 4-4. And I would have lost a lot of money if someone would have said that they're going to be 4-4. And I said, there's no way. I'll bet you anything you want. And I would have lost. I mean, I'm shocked that those two teams, as talented as the Pittsburgh Steelers are, and I know Ben's been beat up, but with Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, a good offensive line, I'm shocked that they're 4-4.
Yeah, but Ben's hurt. I mean, it's clear he's hurt. But you're accountable. I'm with you, Tony. You're on the field. You're accountable. But he did not play very well yesterday. It took him at least 2.5 quarters to even look like the Ben Roethlisberger we've known. And it wasn't like Baltimore was moving the ball up and down the field either. They just couldn't do anything. Le'Veon Bell looked bad. He was dancing and tap dancing and everything else. That Ravens defense is pretty darn good now.
Those two guys inside are good. Brandon Williams and Timmy Jernigan are good players.
Right, and then they got Mosley back playing at it. Suggs is getting healthy again. You know, the young corner, they put that rookie in at corner. Young, he's playing pretty well over there. Weddle's good. Jimmy Smith's back healthy again. That defense is pretty good. And, Pittsburgh looked bad yesterday. And they got a big game this week. You know who comes to town? The Dallas Cowboys.
And Dak Prescott, 3 touchdowns, 21-27. But, Pete, you wrote today in your musings that the Cowboys should go back to Romo.
I would. And I wrote,
you're
and
an
you
idiot.
Saw what I wrote. You saw what I wrote. Which one gives them the best chance to win a Super Bowl?
Right now, Dak Prescott.
Really? You really believe that?
I just
You don't believe that, Tony. I know you better.
Pete,
than
I guess
that. You don't believe.
Why would Romo give him a better chance?
Pete, I guess
he's a better player.
Well, Pete, but
has he been through deep in the playoffs before?
13 years ago, Pete. Weren't you saying the same thing? Wasn't everyone saying the same thing about Drew Bledsoe, that he gives him a better chance?
Yes.
And I think there's something about chemistry. When things are on a roll, I just don't think you change that. They're playing really good football right now. And sometimes just because a guy's a better player, and I agree with you, Tony Romo's a better quarterback than Dak Prescott right now. Maybe Dak will be better down the road, but right now, I mean, if you're rating two guys, Tony Romo's better. But sometimes the best player doesn't always make the team better. And I think you have to be really careful. I wouldn't make the change.
Would you – let me ask you this. Okay, let's just say, for the sake of this argument, Prescott goes to Pittsburgh because he's going to start this week and he doesn't play very well. And they lose. Would you make the change then?
No.
Boy.
Now, if I get if there's a couple games where it's shaky.
Well, he didn't play well. He didn't play well last week, Tony, against the Eagles until the fourth quarter.
Pete, they're 7-1.
Yeah, what do you want him to do?
They lost
Go through the schedule and tell me any of those games that Romo would not have won with the way they play the game right now.
I don't know that, Pete.
Oh, you know it.
No, I'm just saying because you don't know. It's something about – you know this. You've been around
team
sports.
Never mess with a winning streak. And maybe they're not on a streak, but you know what I mean.
Well, they are. They haven't lost
in
three.
Well, they are on a streak.
That's what I'm saying.
They've won 7 games in a row.
Yeah. Well,
they might be 8-0 if Romo had played.
Let it go. Let them go.
I wouldn't.
I'm more open to keeping him in there than I was, I'll be honest about it, but I'd still probably go back to Romo. But here's the other thing, Tony. When Romo is cleared – how does the kid handle it? Because that could make him start playing tighter. That's a concern of mine. Once you go to Romo, you can pull him out and go back to Prescott, right? If you go to Romo, don't you have to stay to Romo? I mean, right?
That's a great question, Pete. I think Jason Garrett has some really tough decisions to make down the path.
You mean Jerry does?
Well, okay. Jerry has some tough decisions about what he's going to tell Jason to say he's going to do.
Coach Jarrah.
So I just wouldn't make the change. I'd stick with Dak.
The Lions hit a 58-yard field goal at the end of regulation, and Golden Tate had the incredible touchdown in overtime. Minnesota reeling now after the overtime loss. They were reeling before.
Started 5-0, lost 3 in a row now, lost their offensive coordinator. I think there's big problems up there.
There are big problems up there. They can't move the football. He's getting gun-shy in the pocket. He's calling all little quick routes to get the ball out of his hand. It's bad. And you know how that is, Tony. The defense is starting to press because they know they take the field every week knowing they're going to have to, you know, make a stop just to be in the game every single possession. So that wears on the defense. So, yeah, they're in a bad shape. The Lions, by the way, are smack dab in the middle of the playoff race. I mean, Caldwell was on the hot seat 3-4 weeks ago. And now they're on the, you know, their game out of first place in the division.
They're 4-4, right, Pete?
5-4.
5-4. So they're half game. They're half game out.
Matt Stafford's playing good football.
Gutsy football.
There is some good news in that.
A lot of comebacks.
If the Lions continue to win, that means that there's one less team competing at the end of the season for Josh McDaniels.
Okay.
These New Orleans Saints, what a ground game. 248 rushing yards for the Saints, 158 for Mark Ingram, who bounced back from being benched, and the Saints roll over the Niners. That was expected, but the way they did it, Pete, was pretty interesting.
The 49ers are atrocious on defense. It's hard to believe. What was that, 3 years ago? Am I wrong about it? It was 3 years ago they played in the championship game against Seattle, remember? And they were so physical and nasty and everything else. And then Navarro Bowman got hurt and that thing. And then Justin Smith retired and Harbaugh left. And it's unbelievable how bad they are on defense now. Their linebackers are terrible. They can't tackle. They get run on. They get thrown. It's awful. It's a bad. Think about this. Colin Kaepernick threw for 398 yards or whatever he did yesterday, and they got destroyed. They're so bad on defense.
They're not much better on offense, are they, Pete?
No. But Kaepernick is playing actually decent football for him. I mean, which, you know, brings up the question, why the hell were they ever playing Blaine Gabbert in the first place?
Wasn't he hurt, though?
Does Chip Kelly – yeah, he was
hurt. Yeah, Kaepernick was hurt. Yeah.
Should Chip Kelly go back to college? I mean, has this whole thing just not worked?
The only thing is, you know, you hear Chip Kelly didn't like the big-time boosters around and recruiting and all that. Maybe he needs to go back to, like, New Hampshire or something. You know what I mean? Just be a coach. Made enough money.
Let's finish with Monday Night Football. The Buffalo Bills back from the dead after an 0-2 start. They won 4 straight, but they've now lost 2 more back-to-back in the AFC East. All the way to Seattle tonight to face a Seahawks team that was 4-1, but they tied the Cardinals and lost last week to the Saints. The 12th man is ready for Rex. Who you got?
This is the easiest game to pick ever. The Seahawks. The Bills are not going across the country on Monday Night Football and beating the Seahawks. Not a
chance. I'm with you.
What, I mean,
I'm with you, Tony.
Tell me the
line.
Whatever the line is, I've never gambled on NFL football before, so. But whatever.
Entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, but this
it's
might
six
be.
Six and a half, I think. It's six and a half.
This might be the time I break the rules because this is like stealing money. I mean, come
back
on.
Back-to-back road games, too, for the Bills. They went to Miami, remember? And now they're going to.
New England, Pete.
No, I'm sorry. They played New England last week. My bad. But they have problems on defense, too. Russell Wilson has a brace on his knee. Took it off. He was terrible with the brace. He couldn't step into his throws. I bet you he plays better today. I'm with you, Tony. Seattle wins that game easy.
Two touchdowns.
Two. Wow.
Or, yeah, 10 to 14 points they win by.
Is that another double lock?
No.
Apparently no. It is. You guys both picked them.
Yeah, it's a double lock then.
Double lock. Seahawks. Get it done tonight. Hey, Pete, have a great show, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, fellas. Take care.
Pete
Prisco, CBS Sports senior writer. We'll come back and wrap it up.
It's just a wrap, JP.
Just me and Bo.
Best part of the show.
Put a bow on it when we come back. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio. Final moments of Jaguars Monday. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco is out of here. Jaguars and the Houston Texans coming up here at Everbank Field this Sunday. A very rare home game here for the Jags. They've been out, I think, what, two home games in a nine-week window. We're still in the midst of that window. Two games at Everbank Field in a nine-week window. They had the game at Wembley as part of that as well.
Yes.
What are you giggling at over here?
Oh, we got these special buttons over here. Talkback, I was seeing if my talkback worked, if I could talk to Joe. I'm going to test it right now.
Well, no, he doesn't have the right headset on right now, Tony. This is technology. Okay?
Oh,
there's also a cough button. Use that more often. Yeah, nice job. So the Jags get the Houston Texans, first of two meetings this year, and Houston has dominated the recent history of this rivalry. They've won, what, 9 of the last 11 meetings?
It's over. The reign is over. Over.
Double locked it.
Double lock, combination lock.
Yeah.
It's easier than we thought it was going to be at the beginning of the year with no J.J. Watt. Him out with the back injury. They still got good players. Whitney Mercilus is a very good player.
Yep. Jadeveon Clowney. First time we'll see him.
Jadeveon Clowney.
He has not played against the Jags.
We got a couple good corners. One of them's an Alabama kid.
Roll Tide.
So, offensively, they're struggling. Brock Osweiler, $17 million a year. A lot of questions in big H-Town about that signing.
9 touchdowns, 9 picks.
Yeah, not good. Not good. Offensive line has been beat up quite a bit. A lot of injuries.
They just had a guy with a double knee injury,
torn patellas. I didn't even know you could do that. Lamar Miller, though, nice pickup. And then they got some weapons outside with the cat from Notre Dame, Will Fuller. And then
Hopkins,
big man, DeAndre Hopkins, who's an absolute stud who took advantage of us last year here against with the 1-on-1 matchup against Devon House.
That's right, he did.
So it'll be
It'll
be interesting to see, does Todd Wash, defensive coordinator for the Jaguars, decide this week that it's time to test Jalen Ramsey against DeAndre Hopkins, one of the tougher 1-on-1 matchups, big physical receiver, great hands, really good catching the ball in traffic. It'll be fun to watch if that's the matchup
if
that happens.
If not now, when? I mean, why not do it now? You know? Might as well throw the guy that you feel is probably your best on the best.
Well, if you're going to play a lot of man, yeah, that's what you do.
Right.
Now, they might
zone it up a little
bit. They might look at it and say, no, we're going to play more zone this week, and then they don't have to do it. All depends on what the what the game plan going in is, you know. If you feel like maybe you can stop the run and you want to take away some of the outside stuff, maybe play a little more too high safety, something this team does not do a lot of but has the capabilities of, and stop the run against an offensive line that's not great with just the seven guys up front. So it'll be interesting, a little bit of something I'll be looking forward to Especially, I think it would be fun to watch Jalen Ramsey against DeAndre Hopkins. But I'd, more than what I want is not fun this week. I want the best game plan to win. So if that's playing zone, and so be it. Just figure out how to beat those guys.
How about a win, yes. A winning result is what this team needs right now.
Well, listen, they need to win for multiple reasons. One, I want them to win because winning's better than losing.
Thanks, Nuke.
Two, I want them to win because I'd like them to win in front of the home crowd. It'd be good. They haven't won here at Everbank since, was it Indianapolis last year?
Been a while, yeah.
I think that was
the
last.
Beat the hell out of them, yeah.
Or maybe it was the Titans late on that Thursday night game. I can't remember which game came first.
Yeah, we'll look at it.
Or last, I guess. So it'd be nice for the fan base, the home crowd, to get a good win. And get a little better feeling, a little better taste in the mouth.
Yeah, that Colts game was the last one. That was the 51-16 win.
It's been too long, though.
That was December 13th last year.
Yeah, you need to have one of those every week.
Every week?
Every week you need to win at home. You need to be 8-0 at home.
Yes.
7-1 at least.
And then win a few on the road.
I'll take 6-2 right now, but 8-0. Well,
would you? I think everybody would right now, right? So that's coming up Sunday. We'll be on the air Sunday at 10 o'clock with the Publix Tailgate Show. We'll have Thursday radio still, of course. You're going to be, where are you at? The Browns.
Baltimore, Cleveland.
Yeah, what a matchup.
Matchup of division rivals. One going for the lead and one looking for a win. We'll tune in.
We'll talk to you from the Inner Harbor Thursday night.
I hope they have crab cakes up there.
I think they might.
Well, they don't always have it in the press box.
I think you can find some that day.
But big games, national games, sometimes they have the crab cakes in the press box.
I bet they might. For Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco, Joe Fortunato, Max Hockman, I'm JP Shadrick. Thank you for listening to Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.